listening to the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford, and on this week's episode, Richard Jeffrey gives us an insight into his Rolex Kentucky three-day event show jumping course. But first, we hear from the executive director of the Rolex Kentucky Organizing Committee, Lee Carter, as he reviews this year's event. Lee, I know that this has been now your third year in office, but this was a year to celebrate, wasn't it?
It was an absolutely wonderful year. I mean, it was. I think we had near record crowds throughout the event. The weather was amazing, and of course, the competition itself was just fabulous, going down to the last ride. So it was a great year to be at the Horse Park and to experience the Rolex Kentucky 3-day event.
Well, coming into the event, there are so many moving parts, obviously, to the organization. But give us a sense of how it unfolded leading up to the event.
You know, we actually began working on the event not long after the 2013 event ended. It does take a full year. We spend some time obviously evaluating what works and what didn't work in 2013, and then really began to make firm plans for this year. One of the things that we really wanted to focus on is our marketing and our messaging, and I think that really showed itself in the crowds that came out and joined us. The Rolex Kentucky 3-day event is really a legacy event. It's been a wonderful event for folks to come out to see, and we've got such a passionate fan base. And so it's a great group to market to and promote to and to get engaged with. And so we really put a heavy emphasis on that this year, and I think the results proved themselves worthy there.
Well, you, of course, have so many partners in that marketing endeavor which contribute to the success of the event, and loyal sponsors as well. Give us a sense of how many there are as part of that family now, and who's come on board in recent years, and some you've had for many years.
Yeah, we've got a great sponsorship group. We have close to nearly 50 corporate sponsors or individuals that sponsor. Rolex Watch being our title sponsor for 34 years. It's an amazing partner to have. Land Rover as well. Land Rover's stepped up to the presenting sponsor. This is their second year in that role. And they're just wonderful partners. With the tailgate and the test drive that they offer, it really enhances the overall experience that we have. Of course, USEF, the Equestrian Federation, is another sustaining sponsor of ours, and they're great partners. And this year we were able to introduce some new things. We had the Dewberry of Ireland Nations Team Challenge, and that was great. Dewberry has been a longtime partner for us, but they really stepped up this year to help us with this new initiative that we got, and I think the product was wonderful. Beyond that, we've got, again, a lot of other sponsors from Bob Micklers to Kubota to Central Equipment to SSG Gloves. So it's just down the line. What we're really seeing is our sponsors wanting to get engaged, wanting to be creative with how they present themselves and present their brand, and so we're fortunate to have their support and involvement.
Well, you mentioned the Dubarry's Nations Cup Challenge. Explain that, because as you've mentioned, it is actually a very good way to enhance their message. How did that unfold?
We began having conversations with David O'Connor a couple years ago about this, and one of his initiatives as the U.S. team coach is to put our U.S. riders into positions where they compete as a team, because as they go to the World Games and as they go to the Olympics, this is a chance for them to kind of develop those relationships and understandings of how they compete. So this has been something that we've talked about for a period of time, and we were excited to be able to introduce it this year, and I think it had a nice enhancement. Of course, it was great with the U.S. team coming in first for that particular competition this year. So we had a great time introducing that, and we think it's going to continue to grow in the years to come.
What else was new this year, Lee? You mentioned that you had learned from the previous year and made some changes. Give us a sense of what those were.
Yeah, two things that we did. Again, one of the things on a marketing standpoint was we introduced our mobile app, which I think was great. It's a great way for us to engage our audience, for them to stay up to date with the competition, with the schedule of events, the results, ride times, all those kinds of things. So it's one of those touch points that we really wanted to get out there. One of the other significant changes that we made is on Saturday of cross country. You know, we've talked about this before, but we removed the lunch break. And really from a competition standpoint, it was one of the things that I think really made for an exciting day. So in previous years, we'd had a break in there, but we'd been hearing for some time from competitors that once they start, they don't like the break. You know, inevitably, either the morning or the afternoon, one group would do better than the other. And so they felt like if we continued on throughout, it would make for a better flow for the event. And I know that's how badminton and burley, you know, run theirs as well. And so we had a lot of conversation about that. And so we taking that away allowed us to start a little bit later, again, allow folks to get on the grounds, do some shopping, and then run straight through with the cross-country phase. And it turned out well.
Well, I know two things that organizers always want to see for any event, and that's a safe competition and good weather. Now, you had both, didn't you? We don't want to see the ambulance moving all day, and I think you could safely say you had a very safe day, and also you were blessed with wonderful weather over the weekend, too.
Absolutely. It was a fabulous time. All of our riders were safe. You know, I think Derek put forth a challenging course that asked the right questions. Fortunately we had good results and everyone came through, and the weather was fantastic. You know, Saturday and Sunday were just absolutely gorgeous, with amazing crowds. You know, we had a little bit of rain on Friday, but it didn't keep people away. We had a beautiful crowd on Friday. The stadium was full or near full for dressage on Friday afternoon. And that actually helped. The rain on Friday, I think, helped to prepare the cross-country course on Saturday. So it worked out perfect. I don't think we could have asked for anything better.
Well, another measure of success, of course, is the number of attendants over the 4 days. Lee, what were those figures looking like this year?
We had a great year. We ended up with a little over 78,000 was our total attendance. And, you know, it was near record crowds, if not record crowds. It was fabulous. Saturday, it was one of those things. We actually ran out of parking in our normal parking area, so we had to make some adjustments real quickly to identify some alternative locations. And, you know, that's a great problem to have, and it's not one that I think we've experienced before. So it turned out to be a big crowd, a fun day, and I think everybody enjoyed it.
Well, as you said, you start to work on next year already when the car parks are clearing from this year's event. So what sort of things are you going to be taking forward to next year's event, Lee?
Yeah, we're going to spend some time evaluating. We're going to obviously look what worked, what didn't work, you know, ways that we can enhance what we've been doing. You know, again, one of our big and primary focuses is, you know, what is the experience that we provide to everyone that comes, be they a competitor, be they a volunteer, be they a spectator. We want to ensure that they walk away with a sense of the wonderful experience that makes them want to come back. And so we'll begin to dissect everything that we do and all the touch points to see how it worked, how it didn't work, how can we improve upon the experience for 2015 to ensure everybody comes back and has another great year.
Well, for the competitors who are listening and who aspire to riding at Rolex one day, just remind them what the prize money was on offer this year.
Total prize money for the week was $250,000, and of course William Fox Pitt, as the winner, was able to walk away with $80,000. So it was a great week for him, and a great opportunity for us to look about opportunities to increase it in the future.
Terrific. And of course, there are so many other attractions apart from what happens in the main Rolex arena. Did you get good crowds attending those as well this year?
We did. You know, I think all of our vendors are down at our trade fair. Had a fabulous time. One of the new things that we actually introduced down there that I should mention is Kentucky Uncovered, where we had vendors that were selling uniquely Kentucky product. And we had everything from artists to small farm wineries to a variety of different things down there that, again, really highlighted Kentucky and some of the unique elements of the state.
Can we expect anything new and different in the years to come? Do you have like a 3 or 5 year vision of where you would like the event to go?
You know, we're working on that. We've got a lot of things that we want to do. Again, one of the things that I'm hopeful for is that we continue to increase our prize money, that we continue to grow the number of participants. You know, we want to put forth an event that everybody's proud of, that everybody wants to come and participate in, and so we're wanting to grow that. So There are a lot of ideas that are out there, and we're going to continue to work for them and develop a good plan to put them in place.
And we should mention that you had the new competition director this year. Maybe you want to just mention Vanessa's role.
Absolutely. Vanessa Coleman, who's actually been on our staff for a couple of years, I think since 2009. She's filled a couple different roles for us, but she was moved into the director of competition position following last year's event, and she just did an amazing job. She has a long history with this event. She has a great understanding of everything that takes place, and she really excelled and just really did a wonderful job connecting with our competitors, our owners, our volunteers. And I think that really is a good reason for a lot of the success we had, is just the excellent job that she did. And so we're fortunate to have her on our team, and I expect she's going to continue to enhance and grow and push our competition in the right direction.
And as we all know, that any event relies heavily on the volunteers and their generous support. How many volunteers do you have in total now helping Rolex each year?
You know, we have over 2,000, and they come and spend just countless hours from decorating the cross country course with flowers, to walking around the grounds during the event picking up trash, to staffing a bag check. They just do so much, and really the event could not happen without them, and so we're fortunate and blessed that they have the passion and the love for this event to come and want to give of their time. And so it's amazing to me as I meet more and more of our volunteers, and I hear their story, and I find out that they've been doing this since 1978, and that just the time and the commitment that they have is just wonderful, and it really is what makes this event unique.
Well, clearly Rolex has been and continues to be the showcase event for the sport, and so we want to congratulate you all for another fabulous year for Rolex, Lee, and look forward to many more. Thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Richard Jeffries is the show jumping course designer at Rolex, and he joins us now to offer some insight into the questions he presented over this year's course. Richard, how many years have you been designing at Rolex?
That was my 17th. I've done every single four-star since it started, so 17 years.
Well, by all accounts, it was, as always, the challenge that was required to sort out the leaderboard at the end of the day. It was a fantastic competition, beautiful weather, of course. But before we talk about the course, because I know that you get into the arena right after the dressage has cleared out. Now, do you get a chance to see any of the cross-country before you have to start work?
Well, I did two fortunate things. I was getting in early in the week. I'm very lucky, and I walked the course with the jury on Tuesday before they officially open it, along with Jerry and the TV and Derek. And that's great fun because we discussed it quite a bit. And probably many people think of me as a show jumping course designer, but many years back I ran a horse trials in England and used to help with the cross country course there and design that. So my basic start was really with cross country course design and then went into show jumping. So it's always fun to do that. And then while the cross country is on that we're working, the big telescreen's on in the arena, so we can watch what's going on at the same time. So I think it's a bit of best of both worlds.
Yes, it really is. And it warmed up in the arena in every sense of the word yesterday. Record crowds that turned out to fill the Rolex Stadium. Now, your task is, as ever, to sort out who would be the worthy winner of the coveted trophy. And by all accounts, you did just that yet again, with being absolutely spot on. Now, this is clearly an art form to get it just right, Richard. Tell us about the course that you had in mind, because when you've designed it for so many years, you've always got to come up with something fresh. Does that present a challenge for you?
It does, but actually I do have on me every single course that I've done there, and it's great fun with looking over them each year. I brought them out to Mark Donovan, who is a great help to me in the arena, great course designer himself. I was showing him those drawings, and they were saying that the things we built, or things I built 15, 16, 17 years ago, had I built that course yesterday, then probably 50% or more would have gone clean. It's amazing when you look back over the courses, how times have changed and how show jumping has risen and getting more like a regular Grand Prix course. But that's my problem, actually, because when I'm doing a regular Grand Prix, I know what I'm dealing with. You know, your whistle horses are weak. You get a feel for them. But the difficult thing with three-day eventing is I don't really know how the horses have come off the cross-country course. I mean, they may look okay in the jog, whatever. You're really dealing with a little bit of an unknown factor, so that makes it hard.
So you set off with the course then to really sort them out, to give them an opportunity to stretch out, given, as you say, many of them will be tired. They'll have reacted differently to having galloped cross country. And there again, depending on the footing, which I understand was absolutely perfect this year on the cross country. And you're bringing them back into a sand arena on all weather footing. So talk us through the course and how you set that up for them to jump, you know, to ask different questions over the jump as they go through the course.
Well, the first thing I'm very conscious of, and yesterday was, as you say, absolute record crowds. I mean, the place was absolutely packed. So what I like to do is create a course that everybody gets to feel the horses at least twice, you know, get them around the arena. So the arena, you know, here at Kentucky is so great that you can always do anything in it because it's so large. But as I say, you want people to at least see the horses twice, so that stays in your mind. I then look back and see what combinations I used last year, whether I used it, you know, early in the course, late in the course, whether it was a vertical going in, an officer going in, whatever. So I try to ring the changes that way. And then this year, I had a little bit of the World Equestrian Games in my mind because you know, we're not quite sure who's doing the course. Normally, it is the definitely the show jumping course designer, but you know, it may be an assistant of his or may not. So I kind of looked at some of his courses that he'd done in the past, particularly built a lot at the Bowl. And there, the course was a very open, flowing, and the thing is that very often, you know, you get the odd rail down, but it's time faults that probably come in at the end and count. So the other thing I had in my mind for this year was to create a course that everybody had to do the same track. Most times I try to have somewhere that someone could perhaps, you know, cut a corner, come inside a fence if they wanted to, particularly if, you know, they wanted to add in a line to maybe add some strides in other places. But one thing I did this year was more or less make everyone follow a similar track. And, of course, we wheeled it. Mark and I wheeled it separately, and then the TD came in and wheeled it. And we all came up with the same number, which is great. And if you actually look back at the times of the riders on the course, there's a huge group of them right within the time. The time was 84 seconds, and there was a whole group in 83 and a bit. I don't think I've seen so many people so close. We had a few, just a few over the time allowed, but that was nice. But it was sort of a little bit of a lesson there to get everyone aware that both going to the World Equestrian Games, how important it is, you know, to ride at 375 metres a minute.
Well, let's start with that first fence, because it proved to be a little bit of a bogey fence. It was catching out a few people at the start. And interestingly, as I'm sure is only too familiar for you, you get the lower order going and there's all kinds of results there. But then you get to the top 20, and as the better horse and rider combinations go, the picture changes. But that first fence seemed to trip a few up.
Well, normally at an event, especially in the lower levels, you'd have a nice, lovely, inviting first fence to get them going. But to me, when you get to the high levels, get to the four-star, get to regular Grand Prix in show jumping, every fence needs to count. And fence one was very impressive. As you know, we have all the old World Equestrian Games jumps that we had in games we here in Kentucky. So I sort of moved those about a little bit each year so they look different. And the way the course worked out, I was really left with the Claiborne fence as the first fence, and I wanted it to be an officer. But that has just solid green rails. So when you've got an officer of solid rails, it's not quite so defined if they were striped. So that was one of the things. Plus, it has some lovely curved side walls to it, and Sheila Worth and her decorating crew made a fantastic job of decorating it. So it was a very, very impressive first jump, you know, when they came in that arena with all the noise and absolutely thousands of people, and then faced with this fence. It really was a wake-up call for some, and I think, you know, just one or two horses perhaps were not quite concentrating as they should do.
So once they've got underway, then you're looking to mix it up for them. How did you plan how you mix it up for them around the course and where you were going to put the combination and the double and that obviously final combination? And fence three seemed to be a bogey as well. Now, I know that you've got some thoughts about why that caught some of them out.
Well, so I wanted to start off with a lot of individual fences because it's so easy for people to stop, you know, picking their way around slowly, and that's where they're going to get the time for. So, you know, I wanted it to be a wake-up call to start with. They really had to be on the first five fences and keep going. If they started having down those lines, they'd be in trouble. There was a number, it was a nine strides to the second fence, which was the FEI. And both the first and the second fences were a whole lower than the maximum I can build to 1.30 meters. Both of those were 125, so that was a nice introduction. And the thing is, with arena, you know, if you go down, you've got to come up, and when you come up the arena, you're faced with that huge grandstand, which was, I'd say, absolutely packed. So while, you know, the horse has been used to jumping into the crowd on the cross-country course, they're probably more used to jumping into crowds than the regular show jumpers because, I say, the cross-country course is always so packed. You're really faced with that, and, you know, that has a certain amount of distraction. But the third fence was the Rolex Grand Slam jump, which I designed for Rolex a few years ago. And it was designed in their colours, with a, you know, nice wall on the bottom and Lexington, Badminton, Burley written on the wall. And the green rails to match the Rolex colour. And that's never been such a great problem in the past, but we built it up there, and when I came and finished the course, I started weaving it, and I said around the corner to this one, we used to have the concrete wall. There's a grey concrete wall at the bottom of the grandstand, and this year they put some artificial green ivy on it, which made it far more attractive. But suddenly when I turned the corner, I couldn't see the green pole. It's right bang against the green ivy. So it was from last-minute rush. We managed to find two old poles and painted them white to match the white of the lettering. So at least the pole stood out. But what's quite interesting is then the wall itself underneath, which is very similar colour to the dirt of the arena, and then has the letters of the three events on it, really draws the horse's eyes down to the base of the wall. And I've noticed this before when I've used it as a first fence here at Rolex. It has formed a few times. Now, strangely enough, when I use it, because we have one in England as well, and I use it at Burley, but at Burley it's on grass, and I think it's a better contrast with the wall. But also, these days, you see very few walls in jumps. You know, a lot of people probably remember that quite often you have a nice wall on the first fence with a flower box in front of it, all that lot. And you don't see so much of that these days. We've got away from all that sort of much more open jumps. And I think sometimes, you know, this will catch the horse, and they just pop their eyes down at it and get the rail. It came down a lot. It didn't come down quite as many as others. Fence 9A and fence, I think it's 11 and 12, 12 and 13 came down just as many times. But it was early in the course. It was absolute maximum height. So I think it was a little bit of a wake-up call for everybody.
And in terms of where you position the combination, then you put it at an angle, again, coming towards the crowds there, just two fences from home. So that obviously was deliberate. Everything you do in the arena is deliberate. So what's your thinking behind placing the combination at that angle, coming towards the crowd again, and then giving them two fences where they might think, oh, they can go a little bit long, the horse is getting tired, we'll get a bit longer and may just flip a rail going out. I noticed that was seven strides from the penultimate to the last fence for everybody except Buck Davidson.
No, six strides. It was exactly 84 feet.
Okay, six strides. That's right. And he took one out just to show that he could alter your measurements.
Well, no, it was quite funny. I was talking to Buck afterwards, and he understood that when you jumped the riverboat at St. Sven. You could see the rock, and you had to jump that at 60 seconds to get within the time. And he was a couple of seconds over it, and he knew that he couldn't race up to the culmination, he said, and he had to be careful to fence 12. But the minute he got fence 12, he said he just sat and rode to lead the one stride out because he knew he was going to be done on the clock. So very interesting tactics that way. But going back to placing the combination, what I do when I design the course, I really design the track. I design the line as it flows around the arena. And sort of jumps in the end, you know, you have some idea, okay, I'm going to start here, I'm going to finish sort of this area. And kind of jumps by their own places in a very strange way. And what I like to do, though, is, you know, have a question with, you know, within a line, like we had 9AB down to, Liverpool at 8 down to 9AB. And then you had a little bit of a breather, you had enough strides to get down to the riverboat, jump that. So the combination really found itself. I wasn't purposely putting it to jump into the stands, but I didn't want it right at the end of the course. And I say, it was early last year, so I wanted it later this year. So it kind of found itself, and it was never purposely built to jump into the crowd. It's just in a big arena like that, you know, you're going to get the crowd. And of course, again, this was good with Wegg coming up, because the horses are going to go there, are going to be jumping in a huge stadium with lots of people. It's probably there on four sides of them. So wherever they jump at Wake, they're going to be jumping into the crowd. So it was a good exercise, I think, for the riders to know who actually the horses and how they coped with it.
And you had how many clear rounds in the end? Was it about 12 that you got at the end of the day? And some with one with
time? I think it was 10. Yeah, I think it was 10, and one more with the time fault.
One more with the time fault, yeah. So would that be what you were looking for? I mean, I know hindsight is 20/20.
Yeah, I think last year we only had 4 clears, but we only had, I think, 26 starters. And as I said, it's hard. I have a better feel when I'm doing a Grand Prix, when I know my horse is better. But, yeah, I was very, very happy with 10, but it was a case of, you know, what state the horses were in after the cross country. So it's harder to dictate a number at a 3-day event as compared with a regular Grand Prix.
And of course, it climaxed with 2 beautiful clear rounds. So you must have been hugely satisfied then. And were you patriotic towards the British win? Because you spend half your time here, Richard. So are there divided loyalties?
Well, I had the best of both worlds. You know, it's rather going to be an American or a Brit, so I could wave whichever flag I felt was appropriate. No, but what I was pleased about was that the top 2 stayed with the top 2. Had they swapped around, I'd been quite happy. The group below them were very close together with, you know, scores, and you knew that, you know, one rail down would change the placings. And, you know, normally I don't like to see too much of a shuffle. Sometimes people say, oh, it was only 2 clear rounds. But if everyone had 4 faults, it was the same as everyone going clean, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
In eventing, because, you know, it's just adding the faults on. So, yeah, I was very pleased that the top 2 who'd, you know, still on the dresser's score, both jumped clean, you know, and proved that they were the best. It's often people say, you know, they left, you won on your dresser's score. Well, you might have finished on just a score, but you had to jump clean cross-country within the time, and you had to jump clean show jumping. So it was great that, you know, the top 2 horses proved that you know, they're the best in all 3 phases.
And as always, you presented the perfect test for them to round off a fabulous event, Richard. And I know that you also come to the annual meeting to present your course designing seminar. So you'll be back again in December to the annual meeting so members can benefit from your wisdom. Hopefully you'll learn a few tricks of the trade.
Yeah, I think we're doing that again. There might be a change of day within it. There was some discussion about that, which we may hear a bit more later on. Maybe more within the middle of the convention rather than the day before, but we'll see what happens that way. And then, of course, between now and then, I'm still working with the USCF's course advisory program, which is great fun. I think we're now in our 10th year. And while I'm here in Kentucky this week, Sheila Costello and I will start going through the summer omnibus schedule and picking out 3 or 4 events. And great fun doing that because it's a great opportunity. Initially, you know, a few people get apprehensive when they get a letter from Sheila saying, you know, your course has been picked, but hopefully they realize it's, you know, a great opportunity that we just ask them to send the show jumping course in. And act a bit like a TV. I look at it, and it's not a case of finding fault of it. I mean, some come in, super courses, don't really have to do any more than just say, you know, great course, lovely. Others, you know, you can look at and just tweak them a little bit. So, you know, perhaps if you angle this jump differently, or you're jumping both your combinations off the same lead, it'd be nice if one was jumped off another lead and they annotate your course, or, you know, you've got eight boxes in it, but only four verticals, and we go through it looking at that way. So it's hopefully it's a great experience, and I get lovely feedback from different course designers from that, and along the way made lots of friends.
I'm sure you do, and you will have made many this weekend again at Rolex. So I want to thank you very much for coming on the show, Richard, and reviewing your track.
My pleasure.
On the show next week, Sarah Broussard of Team Rebecca and Lauren Kiefer, the owner and rider of Veronica, who placed second at this year's event, will discuss the mare's performance and what this result means to them. This podcast is also available for download on iTunes. Until the next time, enjoy your eventing.